Welcome to From Caving In to Crushing It, the podcast for those who find themselves immersed in adversity and choose to write their story instead of having others write it for them. I'm Drew Durrani, and I'm your host.
Today's guest is Rick Gabrielli. Rick Gabrielli is a passionate husband, father, author, podcaster, community builder, and American wellness entrepreneur. His limitless enthusiasm, love of technology, energy medicine, and exploration of biohacking inspires and motivates others. By choosing love over fear, Rick creates an environment of high vibration, light-filled possibilities to help others uncover, cultivate, and celebrate their own unique gifts, as well as the gifts in those around them. If you need a little spark, Rick always shows up, ready to light your torch. Rick is the COO and visionary creator of Scarsdale Dental Spa and Wellness for the past 28 years. Along with Carol, his wife of 35 years, they are independent distributors and group leaders for Beamer Group USA since 2016 and co-authors of The Currency of Connection, first published in 2020. Rick is a happy area director and regional growth and development advisor with Master Networks Tri-State Region since 2019, and is a frequent public speaker, wellness educator, and the co-founder and host of the runaway hit podcast and online community, The Road Ahead Cafe, with Frank Vandenhorst and Peter M. Fellows since 2021. Together with Carol, Rick recently launched Well Connected, an integrated brand whose mission is to support the three most important aspects of our world, our body, our mind, and our life, by sharing their three favorite things with everyone they meet, Beamer, The Road Ahead Cafe, and Master Networks. Rick and Carol love home remodeling, meditation, travel, golf, Subarus, sunny weather, and learning new ways to live in joy and abundance. They have two grown sons, Alex 29 and Max 23. They live alongside nature in a peaceful little woodsy hamlet called Pocag in the Hudson Valley region of New York. Enjoy the show. Rick Gabrielli, pleasure to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, my brother Drew. What's up?
Oh, it's been a while. It's been a while. Well worth the wait, though.
Indeed.
And, you know, when before, you know, I hit the record button, I always like having that chat beforehand because I learn a lot about an individual. And at some point, this is going to go on to video. It's going to go first out in audio. But your backdrop, I had to ask about Well Connected, and we're definitely going to get to that. It's very exciting. The audience is going to love that. You know, first, though, I have to thank I always thank the person who introduces us. And I have a spreadsheet that goes back, and you know, initially I figured, oh, we met Master Networks. That wasn't the case. We actually met before Master Networks, and the person who introduced us, this was probably around 3 years ago, and I want to know if you remember this. It was Aaron Hoffman. Aaron Hoffman was the one who said, Drew, you need to talk to Rick, and so I always. Yeah, so I always like to give credit to the person who introduces because that's what Pay It Forward is all about. Oh. So Rick, I wanted to have you on because this is a repeat performance for you. I had you on way in the beginning when I started this, and it's evolved and adapted. And I figured it was over a year ago. Let's have you on again. And a lot has changed since the last time you were on. The one thing that hasn't changed is the type of human being I have on this show, and it's all about the person who takes on adversity and says, I'm going to become a better person because of it, not despite it. And I know you've gone through a lot in your life, my friend, and I wanted to have you on. So, yeah, you know, we talk about when we're growing up, people teach us life is linear. So, Rick, if you do A plus B plus C plus D, E is going to happen. Go ahead, go do it. And we listen and we go. Inevitably, something gets in our way, and we're like, this is going to derail our linear moment, but the linear life. So I'd love for you to reach back however far you need to, and let us know that defining moment, whether it was the tap on the shoulder or what Drew needed, the 2x4 upside the head, to wake you up and said, Rick, there's a better way to live. I'm going to take this, and this is going to be an opportunity for growth. Love to hear about that, my friend.
Well, I have two of them. So I'll
Yeah,
share
yeah.
the first one, which
Okay.
is on August 6th, 1981. I'm 19. I'm just finishing my first year of college, and my dad dies suddenly at 53 years old of a heart attack. One
Jeez.
day, boom.
One day, John.
1 hour, grabbed his arm. An hour later, he was dead. So no warning. And the relationship I had with him as the youngest of three New York Italian kids, everything he said, I did it. I was just like, yes, dad, yes, dad, yes, dad. A little sassy, but I still did everything I was told. I was very compliant. All of a sudden, now my GPS is gone. So I go on this, what I would consider now maybe a 4 or 5 year odyssey, a bender of, trying to kill myself in every way possible. Drugs, alcohol, driving fast, hanging out with the wrong people, just trying to destroy myself because I was in such pain from this loss. I was empty. I was ripped open, never to be filled again. And I just couldn't cope. So I thought, if I just live this hard driving lifestyle, eventually I'll die and I'll go with him. And I was convinced that that was, the right thing to do. And so that's kind of like the first defining moment. And what happened, oddly enough, is that I think maybe in, let's see, 81, like 86, so 5 years or so, one night after like a week long, bender, I'm opening my mail. It's like 4 a.m. and I'm just ripping it open and hallucinating, seeing mice run up the walls. I open a letter from my high school biology teacher, Noel Haskell. And I look at it, and basically the context was, I hear from some of the guys that you're in trouble, you're kind of off the rails, and I'd like to help you. There's a place over here in Nyack, New York. No one has to know about it. And I just folded up the letter, and I never touched another drug after that. And so a switch flipped in my head and in my heart, that if somebody cared this much about me, especially a stranger, even though he was a very close family friend, and like, but my family was complaining to me, Dow, stop this, you're going to kill yourself, stop this. And I only did it, it only fueled me. When I read Noel's letter, something changed.
That
I,
was
it
it.
must have been magical. It was a miracle. Fast forward about 15 years later, we are body surfing in the ocean in New Jersey, off his beach house in Ocean Grove. He was about, I was like, let's see, 38. He was about 68. And we're body surfing, and I take this wave into the water, and he takes a wave, and I don't see him. So I turn and look, and his lifeless body's floating
Oh my God.
upside down in the water. I
Oh.
swim out to him, I get him, bring him back to the shore, and put him on the shore. And he's paralyzed from the neck down.
Oh my
He hit a
God.
sandbar with his head, his neck, and the EMS come. They revive him, resuscitate him, bring him to the hospital. And that night, when I went to his room, and I held his hand, and I whispered in his ear, "Now we're even. You saved my life. Now I saved yours." And we had never talked
Never
about
talked about
letter. After the letter was sent, we never talked about it. And after he made a full recovery, he had a secret surgery to clear out his arthritic spine. After that life-saving incident on the beach, we never talked about the beach incident. So we never talked about the letter or the beach. He went on to live another about 18 years. We traveled, we did all the things together. We enjoyed life. We ate with silver and napkin, cloth napkins, and we did everything. We never talked
Never did
about
something.
either event. And that's the life-saving power of connection.
Absolutely is, Rick. Wow. If you want a definition of connection, it's that story. Absolutely. Geez. So after you've woken up, now was did you go off to college, or was this, or was it like when you
I finished college in my insanity. So
it
even
was
though,
during the insanity. Okay. All
yeah.
right.
So I freshman year, my after freshman year, my father died. I did
That's
the
right.
3 more years, no problem, even though I was, drunk and high and, trying to kill myself. I finished school and took over the family business, and then met my wife a year later. And I was already I was already clean a year when I met Carol.
Unbelievable. Now
Yeah.
that you mentioned Carol, and I have met Carol, and she's a wonderful,
Thank
wonderful,
you.
lovely human being.
Yes.
And I know she supported you in everything you've done. Can you tell me how you guys met? I love those types of stories.
Yeah. So it was about a year after my recovery, and I was playing racquetball to kind of get myself back in physical condition. So I was with a buddy, played some racquetball, went up to this bar called the Wampus Inn in Armonk, New York, which was built in like 1680. I went to the Wampus Inn. I'd only been there twice, the previous Halloween, and this was January of 87. So I'm in there, it's 10 o'clock at night. I walk in with my buddy, and we're just going to have a beer at the counter. And I see this girl walking by in the mirror carrying another girl, like kind of like in a drunken hold. She's
Oh,
walking
geez.
out of the bar. And I said to my buddy, "Wow, do you see that hot, beautiful woman right there carrying that drunk out?" So she goes out the sliding doors to the patio of this bar, and nowhere to be seen. So I'm like, "All right, I missed my opportunity."
Oh boy.
Few minutes later, she comes walking back in. She had put the drunk girl who was the birthday girl in the car. They
Ah.
got there 5 o'clock. It was 10 o'clock.
Oh my
So the
gosh.
birthday girl's in the car sleeping it off, and Carol, my future wife, walks in. And I turned right away and said, "Hey, you got a minute to talk to a nice guy at the bar?" And she
Whoa.
looks me up and down and says, "Who, you?" She sits down.
Incredulous
Next
or
thing you know, next thing you know, we have a conversation. I ask her for her number. She doesn't give it out. And
Okay.
what's odd about that is we had gone back to the bar. I think it was a week later to have like another date, and it burned to the ground. So this place that was built in like the
Oh my
1680s
gosh.
was there for like 300 years
And
and
gone.
burned to the ground.
Unbelievable.
And it was completely gone, and all that was there was the sign, Wampus Inn. And we drove up and we were like, "I guess this must be meant to be." And
Wow.
what's odd is she had said, "You know, I was only here one time before last Halloween." And I said, "I was here
That was the
last
one you
Halloween."
were at.
And she said, "Well, what kind of costume did you have?" And I said, "Well, I just had like a welding mask on because I'd come from my family auto body shop." "What were you wearing?" She said, "I was wearing a paper bag. I was the unknown comic." And I said, "I remember seeing the unknown comic." She said, "I remember seeing the welder,
That's a
but we
ride.
didn't meet." So we were actually supposed to meet the Halloween
At the
before.
Halloween,
But maybe I wasn't ready, and you
Who
know,
knows?
it all worked out. And that was 1987, so that's 37 years
My
ago.
gosh. So when you went up to the Wampus Inn and it was burned down, where did you continue the date? You just went somewhere else.
Well, so we just went, we left, and we couldn't believe that it was just
Just
ashes. And
gone,
then we had
ashes,
gone to another place called Tony's L'Estazione in Elmsford, New York. And we went there for many, many dates after that. And
That's
we're
great.
still dating today.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, that those types of stories I absolutely love. Now, was were you had you ever been married prior?
No.
It was your first marriage, and you hit the jackpot
We
first go.
met. Yeah, we met at 25. And what's interesting about the jackpot part is I knew when I saw her in the mirror, that's my wife. But it took me 3 months to convince her. And she thought I was out of my mind because I told her right away, I said, "We're going to get married." And she was like, "Oh my God, here we go."
And she didn't run away. She still
The other
stuck
thing I
around.
did, Drew, is the first night I met her at the Wampus, we started talking, we danced a bit. I know it was like a little stage we sat at. And I told her my whole story about the whole thing with my father dying and the whole 4 years, 5 years. I wanted her to know minute one
Right away, you
what I
just
had gone through. So
way to go.
literally 1 year after getting out of that, I said to the woman who I thought was going to be my wife, I said, "I just want to let you know the baggage." And she was like, "Cool, no worries." And I don't know whether she was freaking out or not, but I think she probably found it strange that some guy would tell her all this dirt about himself. But I just knew my friends, and I knew they would tell her if I didn't. So I was like, "You know what?
Smart
I'm going to
move,
tell
right?
her before she finds out the hard way."
Absolutely. It's the best way to do it, though, because if she stays, then it's meant to be. If she
It
leaves, then
worked.
it's meant to be. It
I made
worked,
one
man.
good decision in my life. That was
Good for
it.
you. Nah, you've made plenty. You've made plenty.
That was a key
So
one.
So, all right. So now you met Carol, you're married. What were you doing work-wise? Were you still doing, you weren't still doing the welding stuff, or were
Well, so
you?
what's interesting is my father wanted me to be a lawyer, but when he died, I was like, I don't want to be a lawyer. I want to take over the family auto body shop.
Okay. All
So
right.
when I got out of college, I begged my mother, let me run the business. And she was like, no, your father doesn't want you to do that. No way. My brother was there at the time. I said, no, please, I got to do this. And she gave in. So I was running the body shop. When I met Carol, who was a banker, she said, you got a college degree and you're such a smart guy. I mean, what are you doing in this? Not that auto body is not a smart
No, I
business,
get it. Yeah.
but she said, I think you need to do something. Why don't you put a suit on and go sell something or do whatever? And so I went on interviews. First one was for a customer service job at Grainger.
Yeah.
Second one was like a travel package salesman. The third one, oddly enough, I had a ponytail down to the middle of my back,
Yeah.
tucked in my shirt. So I went to this copier sales job interview. And I'm sitting there like this with my neck all stiff, talking to this VP of sales, who was a rocker. And Mike Davies, I'm talking to him, and in the whole interview, I'm like stiff like this. So he gets up like a half hour into it, and he comes over behind me and he sees the tail like tucked in and he pulls it out and he says, if you want the job, you got it. So he saw the tail and he's
I
like, if any guy
love
who's got
that.
a tail like that, man, you can work for me. So I said, well, I got to talk to my wife because I was just married 1 year at the time.
Okay.
He said, okay. He takes the phone and he puts it in front of me. He says, call her right now. So we call her up and he makes the call. He's like, Carol, this is Mike Davies. I'm sitting here with Rick. I just want to let you know he's got the job if he wants it. So he wants to know what you think. And she's like, oh, but what, can I talk to him? So I get on. It's cool. And it was draw versus commission, no
Oh, wow.
salary.
Oh,
The other
okay.
two were salary, and it was draw. And I was like, full commissions. I never did that before.
No, yeah.
And I
That's
said, I'm going to do
scary.
it.
Yeah, you
I'm
did
going to
it.
do it. So that started my entrepreneurial journey, even though inside a company,
Yeah.
I was an intrapreneur.
Yeah, no, that I understand the entrepreneur thing.
Yeah.
Did you ace like sales stuff? Because you're a relationship guy, or did he teach
Yeah.
like how'd you learn the
So
sales
what
technique?
happened first was I was being mentored by the owner of the company, this VP and a sales manager
Yeah.
on like the nuances and whatever. It
Yeah.
was really being apprenticed negatively by the other salespeople.
Okay.
They were teaching me the quota's this much. You got to just do that. Don't do more. Don't make us look bad. Don't do too many cold calls. Don't sell too much. Don't sandbag, whatever. Anyway, it was all these like a
Yeah.
culture of this bullpen was different
Limitation.
than the trainings of the head guys were
Unbelievable. Yeah.
go kick ass, limitless man, do it. You can do whatever you and the teammates were like, bro, don't make us look bad, like a union vibe. And I was like, all right.
Interesting.
So
Yeah.
I had to wrestle with that.
Yeah.
After about a year, I figured it out and I became like a sales superstar.
Good for you. Good for you. And obviously, you didn't stay here the whole career. So, what happened? How'd you start to climb up that proverbial ladder or
So
entrepreneurship?
this leads to my second moment of
Oh,
awakening.
here we
All
go. Okay.
right. So I met a guy one day. I was coming out of like a copier cold call in Tarrytown, New York, and I met another guy who I used to like hang out with in the clubs, and he was building a recruiting firm. So he said, hey, why don't you come and be a recruiter, Wall Street recruiter with me? And I was like, I'm not sure, I don't know anything about Wall Street. I'm
Yeah.
a copier guy. I'm an auto body kid. I got a political science degree and an English background, but what do I know about
What do I know?
recruiting in Wall Street? He goes, no, if you can sell copiers, you can sell anything, man. So him and I start this company, and about 2 years into it, we were very successful, two offices, and we had like 14 people working, but he was the owner of it. I was only a partner,
Okay.
a VP, but
Yeah.
I didn't own anything.
Oh, okay. All right.
So there were things that were going on, and I really felt like the need to kind of go entrepreneurial. So I actually on December 10th of 1997,
Okay.
about 2.5 years into it, I went in one day and I just said, you know what, I got to go do my own thing. And I really was choosing myself
Sure.
for working for someone else. And
Right.
that's when I became an entrepreneur. And even though I've been in a family dental practice and a wellness center, It was something I created. So
Oh, okay.
I left there December 10th of 97. I started a consulting firm, which was web design, PR, marketing. And then that kind of led me into medicine with my brother-in-law and sister. My sister married a dentist 30 years
Right.
ago.
Okay.
So that kind of propelled me into that, where I was marketing and IT, but it was a wellness playground. It was a laboratory for me to be able to create something around a dentistry, which was a
Sure.
paradigm shift in how dentistry was offered in a spa-like environment, catered to phobic patients, which was very
Yeah.
successful. And that led me to become a health coach, which led me to wellness. And then we put the wellness element into the dental practice. And that led me to where I am today, which is really integrating wellness for everybody.
Wow. That's an unbelievable journey. And you know that the people you were, I don't know if it's fortunate or God did it or what, but I mean, and you were resilient. You kept moving forward. You kept running into people who noticed your superpowers with connection and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you were comfortable being uncomfortable, going to let me just try it.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because, and this still happens, people were saying, how can we team up with Rick? But what they're really thinking is, how can we use Rick to make money and, let him go out and create for us or sell for us or. So I was never rewarded to the level that I could stay in any one of those situations. I was always, I'm not going to say underappreciated, because I was very much appreciated. I was undercompensated. That made me feel underappreciated. Because let's face it, this is only two ways to let someone know you love them. Tell them you love them and show them love, or give them money or something, right? In business, there's only two things. You're building me up so much that the elevation is irresistible. And that definitely fed my need for recognition, because I was completely recognition minded. Money was secondary. But without enough money, after a while, the recognition is nothing. You can't
Doesn't mean
send it to
anything.
the phone company.
Exactly. You're entirely right. So and that's a wonderful lesson too. It's about knowing your worth and standing your ground. And that's where you are right now.
Well, when I left that Wall Street job, I did not have a job. I had a company idea. And when I got home that day and I told Carol I was coming home, when I got to the house, my 3-year-old was holding up a sign, "Welcome home, Daddy. We're so happy. We love you. We believe in you." And Carol was right there. I had a mortgage, two car loans, a baby, and a wife at home working, not working. So I had no income when I left that job. So no net.
All right. So how did you the first or second step to get out of that and where you are now? Because
After I
sometimes,
said hi to them, I walked in my office in my home and I sat down and I got to work. I did not take a minute off. I went in, I was sad, I was broken, I was clueless, but I sat down at my desk and I just started creating. And that was at the time a company called Rainmaker Consulting, which we had for many years. And it was PR, marketing, web design. I got a few people, I got a few clients, I teamed up, I was creative. And that was actually very successful too. And then when the dental practice, kind of expanded and we grew, 21 years ago, we moved to a new space where we built a wellness center and spa. My time was occupied with that more. And then 8 years ago, I found Beamer. And so it's just nonstop, man, like recreation and like finding out what the thing is that I'm most passionate about. But one thing I'm always fearless about is recreating, doing something new. I get advice, but I don't listen if it's not aligned with my inner. I use my inner compass. I'm more than happy to fail 99% of the time and win 1% with my inner compass than try to get a win with someone else's, compass.
I love that. I love that. That inner compass is so important. We all have that inner compass. Now we don't all listen to it though. So, all right. So let's bring us to where you are now, because I know, we haven't talked about your podcast yet, which I want to hear about, and some of the other stuff you're involved in. So if you can get into some of that.
So as I mentioned, 8 years ago, because I was in the wellness space and medical, I was out at a wellness event out in California called Titanium. It was kind of like a Tony Robbins event, a 3-day event. And, we're all on teams, colorful teams, red, yellow, blue, green. And there's about 400 people out there in this 4-day event. And so one of the exercises during the weekend was we were told ahead of time, if you're on the red team, come with red clothing and red accessories. If you're on the blue team, wear blue, yellow, yellow, green, green. So we're all in this audience and we're all sitting by color. So there was an accountability exercise. So one of the things that I did when I first got there, the organizer's sister was the head of the red team. She had a box of accessories. So I had brought red shirt, red pants, and red cape. So I get there and she's got a red mohawk. And I'm like, give me that. I put it on. I'm sitting in the front row with this red mohawk on for the whole event. So one of the people on the red team, this girl, Heidi Simon, she sees this red mohawk and she's like, I got to know this crazy guy. So during one of the accountability exercises, she comes up and says, I just can't help but, be attracted to you with this red mohawk. Tell me the story, whatever. And then let's do an accountability exercise. So we do the accountability exercise. And what do you do, by the way? I said, I run a dental practice, a spa and wellness center in New York. What do you do? Oh, I have a credit card processing company and I sell this device called Beamer.
Oh,
have it with me. Have you ever heard of it? Nope. All right. Tell me about it. I tell her, she tells me a little bit and she says, I have a dentist in San Diego who's using it and loves it, him and his wife. And if you'd like to talk to them, that'd be great. So I get home, I get the info, me and Carol fly out to San Diego. We meet this guy, Steven, and his wife, Carol Ann, she's also a Carol. And we see Beamer. We bring one home for my brother-in-law. He has amazing results. We start using it. Okay. And then Carol says, I think we got to share this with people. So for the first time, my wife suggested a business plan and an opportunity.
Wonderful.
She never did at the time, it was 29 years.
Unbelievable.
She never suggested a business. She wanted nothing to do with my businesses. This one, she says, I'm going to do this with
That's
you.
That's great.
I'm like, all right, I'm all in. So we become Beamer users and distributors, and then we rose to the level of management and as group leaders. And I've been on the advisory committee twice. I'm a Heart of Beamer award winner. So all in with this thing.
Yeah.
About 3 years ago, I'm at a networking group in the Netherlands in the morning, Spin Ideas with Veronica Gauguin.
You were virtually though.
Virtually,
okay, so you're actually
on a networking group,
and it was Netherlands. Okay.
At 6 a.m.
Okay.
In the Netherlands, because
yeah,
it was
their
noon.
Time is later, yeah.
And I meet this guy Frank Vandenhorst is going to be one of the speakers there.
I love him. Okay.
And he's telling a story about how his father was a magician.
Oh.
And I'm glued. I'm like, oh my God, this is so much fun. And he's Dutch, so he's got like a Dutch accent.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So he's like, my father was a magician, and he's telling me. So after the event, I was so touched. I reached out to him on LinkedIn. I said, man, I love that magician story, Frank. I was a magic lover as a kid, and I believe magic is a big part of my life now, even though it's a different kind of magic. It's not cards and rabbits.
Yeah.
It's internal magic. And
sure.
So we hit it off, and we had a great conversation. And I had met this guy, Peter Fellows, in a mindfulness summit.
Okay.
I said, I want to – and Frank and Peter are much older than me.
Mm-hmm.
They're old guys.
Yeah.
He said, let me put these two elders together, and maybe they could, like
be the young
rock on a porch or something.
I love it.
And I put them together, and they come to the meeting saying, we think we should do something with Rick.
Yeah.
Let's do a podcast.
I love it.
And I was like, all right, now I got to do a podcast with these two old guys.
I love it.
So we created the Road Ahead Cafe, which is just going to record our 100th episode.
Congratulations.
When Frank comes into town
yep.
in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, that's
and
great.
So the Road Ahead Cafe yielded two live events called the Road Trips, which the third one is May 3rd this year.
Yep.
The other two are on Cinco de Mayo. Frank comes in from the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And by the way, Peter's Canadian, Frank's Dutch. I'm the New York Italian.
Is Peter coming in for the May 3rd thing too?
Peter lives in Mamaroneck, New York.
Oh, he's
yeah,
lives,
he
oh,
lives
he's
in
not
New
in
York.
Canada.
He's
Okay.
been in New York for 30
right.
years. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So then that yielded an online community called the Road Ahead Cafe Community, which is an app, and it's all about self-care and up-leveling your life.
Yep.
And then, of course, this Master Networks thing, which I've been in for 5 years,
right,
which I wanted no part of, which is a global network of entrepreneurs and business leaders
right.
who are education and community based that want to leave a legacy beyond the business.
Right, absolutely.
And I became an area director, growth and development advisor, chapter builder, community builder, and all the things in that thing. And that's a volunteer job. And but it's elevated my brand and my psyche. Sure. And
yeah.
given me opportunities for personal growth and mm-hmm. and to reach people and to meet people like you and great other people like us.
Yep.
And foster community. So I was trying to figure out how to integrate Beamer, the Road Ahead, and Master Networks. And I finally came up with Well Connected, which is igniting the spark in you and people like you and others, and in order to foster physical, emotional, and community well-being.
That's wonderful. And that has to happen. You know, usually people are focusing on one of those things. You can work on all three simultaneously.
It's not easy. It's not easy because
not
they all
easy.
Have
it's a
they
lot
all
of
have
work.
lives of their own.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
but I but I'm doing it.
You are wonderful. Good for you, man. I'm proud of you.
Thank you,
so
buddy.
I could talk to you forever. So I know that the audience has captured the essence of Rick Gabrielli, and you guys are going to want more of Rick. So the best way to reach Rick is go to his website. It's Gabrielli.com, Gabrielly.com. There's a digital business card there that explains all the stuff he's involved in, and they're all meaningful and value added in their own way. So please reach out to Rick. All right, Rick, two final questions. All right. I'm going to give you the opportunity to sit down with young 7 to 10-year-old Rick. And you're going to give him advice about life. What are you going to tell him?
Wow. You know, 7 to 10-year-old Rick had a baseball mitt and a ball in his hand 100% of the time. That's
okay.
all I did. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to be a professional baseball player. That was it.
Yep.
And so, oddly enough, the first thing I would tell him is to practice more and to, you know, because I needed to be a lot better than I thought I was to get to where I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I also would have told him that a lot of the people that he was going to meet along the way were going to be very instrumental in his journey. So maybe I would have shared, you know, like if at the time a Celestine prophecy type of book or idea with him that all of these people are put in your life completely for a reason. So even the worst ones, the bullies, the people who, you know, we call petty tyrants, the ones that aggravate you and make you feel like, you know, life is horrible.
Right.
They're all put there to teach you resilience and to build you up and,
right.
you know, make you prepare you for the journey of the thing you're going to do someday, which is to touch people and just be, you know, be a special light in the world. Everyone has special gifts. And so our role here is to share those gifts. So I would say, just keep shining your light, little boy.
I love that. All right, switch hats. Now you're sitting down with young Rick, the young businessman entrepreneur, and you want to give him advice about business. What are you going to tell him?
I'm going to tell him to pick up a percentage of the money he makes to give away and to save, because I had no idea what charity was back then, and I had no idea what savings was. So if I would have, even if young Rick said to me, how's 1%? I would have said, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
1% to charity, 1% to savings would have been a completely different journey, because I would have learned a lot more. And I didn't get either one of those pieces when I was younger.
Right. And you're following that now?
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you. Embody it. You're embodying the that advice. That's
yeah.
wonderful. Well, Rick, I have to thank you for a lot of things. The first thing is obviously coming onto the show, but thank you for coming into my life, my friend. I am grateful for you. You're a wonderful human being. My appreciation for you goes beyond words. And please continue what you're doing. You are helping so many people just by being who you are, your authentic self. And we need more people to do that. So thanks again for being in my life, man.
Brother, I'm just a mirror for you. You know, when I hear what you're doing and see what you're doing, and I see every bit of it, and it's always out there. You're like oxygen, man. You're everywhere. And I love you and I appreciate you, and you are doing amazing things. So especially for men, and you know, giving us a voice is, it's so essential. And you're a highly evolved guy, you know, terrific dad, and terrific son and terrific friend.
Ah, thank you so much, my friend. You're my brother.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. Well, everybody, have a wonderful day, and please take care of yourself. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and give us a review to help others find it. I'd like you to answer this question. Are you living the life you want to live, or are you living the life others want you to live? I'd like you to think about that for a second, because I strongly suggest you live the life you want to live. If you want to learn more about what I stand for and my services and how I'm able to help many men get out of their own way, please go to my website at www.profitcompassion.com. Feel free to also email me at drew@profitcompassion.com. I'd love to have a conversation with you. Take care of yourself and choose to write your own story instead of letting others write it for you.